Good evening and welcome. It's KVCR. I'm David Fleming. Tonight we have once again Aubrey Logan and Eva Mikhailovna. On the last couple of shows, we focused mainly on their newest releases, but with both, we covered other material as well and had some leftovers, including Eva telling some tales and performing one from the new album in studio at KVCR. We'll also hear about Aubrey Logan's beginnings as a vocalist and trombonist and touch on her time with Dave Cause and Postmodern Jukebox. We're going to start with Lillian Vasquez with more on a concert coming to KVCR-TV in the very near future.
I'd like to do a Greek song for you.
Τρίτο στεφάνι, καρδιά μου τι να σε περάσω.
My guest is George Paris. He has a new public television special. It's called George Paris Live at the Acropolis. George, thanks for flying all the way in from Greece just to do this interview.
Thank you for having me, Lillian. It's such a pleasure.
All right, so let's talk about, you are not new to public television. You've performed, you had your first PBS special, our first public television special, and then you've been a guest on several shows. So tell me about this new show.
Well, like you said, this is actually my second solo special. The first one was from Jazz at Lincoln Center. But this one is a little bit particular because it was filmed in Greece, in my home country, in Athens, right at the foot of the Acropolis, at this beautiful theater called the Herod Atticus Theater. It's an ancient theater. It's one of the oldest theaters in the world, more than 2,000 years old. And it's always been my dream to perform there. I've seen, you know, anybody from Pavarotti to Elton John to Diana Ross to classical singers and to my idol Nana Mouskouri, who is a Greek singer. And you know, my biggest dream was always to play there, until it happened a couple of years ago when we filmed that show. And also at the same time, because I had been traveling around the world for a long time, I hadn't performed in Greece, in my hometown, in a while. So it was a comeback for me. It was very emotional. It's actually very funny because while they were doing my makeup before I went on stage, I had a sudden, I couldn't stop crying all of a sudden. Oh. I had tears because of the pressure and the stress. And, you know, I was so touched to be back in my country and my people. So it was a very strong moment for me. And I made sure I enjoyed every little second that passed.
And it was a packed house.
It was sold out, 5,000 seats.
Wow, so, kudos.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you so much.
That's really awesome.
Thank you.
With his gaze set on his habit, every day he's gotta have it, doesn't notice where I am. As he puts a bottle on the table, can't resist but says he's able, and I try to understand.
Talk about some of the songs that you selected to perform in this show.
Mm-hmm.
I know we've talked in the past and off mic where you are a performer, but you also are a songwriter.
Mm-hmm.
And you wrote some of the songs in this special.
Yeah.
How many does it take to feel nothing at all? How many does it take till there's nothing to recall?
On the special, we used only three of my new songs from my album, which I co-wrote, and the rest of them are covers or songs from my previous records and songs that I do in French and Greek because, you know, I sing in quite a few languages. But these three songs, one of them is called Restart, the other one is Perfect Enemies, and the third one is Chase the Sun. These are three brand new songs that I co-wrote with some very special people in L.A., and you know, this new record, it's the first time that I've co-written an entire record. I've never done that before in my life. It's a very different process and a very different experience for me. And it has liberated me. That's why in my head and in my soul, this album is what I call my freedom album, my liberation album. It was the first time that I was completely set free to do what I wanted to do.
And the album you're talking about is Who I'm Meant to Be.
Yes.
Right? So let's break that down just a little bit. Let's talk about some of those songs. Did you co-write all of these in this?
Right. All of them, yeah.
So let's talk about some of them. One of them is How Many Does It Take? What's that talking about?
That song was the first single from the record, and it's a song about addiction. It's a song about an alcoholic, basically. I co-wrote that song with Eric Ross and Sasha Sloan, two amazing songwriters. I had wanted to write a song about addiction for a long time now, in the sense that, you know, we artists write songs because there comes a point where we need to feel a little less lonely. And by writing a song, you realize that even though you become less lonely, you allow your audience and the people who listen to your music to be less lonely as well. So the point of this song was a bridge of, it was like giving the hand, a hand of help to the people who listen to my music, because we all go through that. I mean, I don't think there's a single family that doesn't go through it, any sort of addiction. It's a subject that touches many, many families around the world. And whether it's alcohol or drugs or you name it, it could be anything. So I got the example from two people in my life that I personally knew were struggling from addiction. And this issue has two sides to it. There's a side of the person who has the addiction, but there's also the side of the person who lives with it every single day. I wanted to narrate the story from the eyes of someone who sees it happening in front of their eyes every single day.
And do you feel you accomplished that?
Well, that's not up to me to say. I mean, I'm very happy with the result and very proud of it. And the first reactions to the song have been really positive. So I hope we did. I hope we did. You know, it's always very tricky to touch subjects like that so that it doesn't, it's not too corny or too cheesy or whatever. But at the end of the day, every artist has their own way of expressing themselves. So, you know, my way was to do it through those lyrics.
I'm curious about this one. She Walks On.
Ha. So here's the thing about She Walks On. It's the story of a little girl called Maya. So back home in Greece, we had a huge influx of immigrants from Syria. And one day, I actually used to go to the refugee camps and give food to people. A lot of us did it. And one day, I met this little girl called Maya. She was 9 or 10 years old. Maya's parents had died in the war in Syria, and she came to Greece with her brother, who unfortunately drowned in the middle of the sea. So she was left alone with nobody in the world. And when they introduced her to me, and they told her I was a singer, with the very few words of French that she spoke a little bit of French, she asked me to sing a song for her. And I sang a little lullaby for her. And all of a sudden, this little girl who had lost everyone in her life gave me a huge hug and a big smile on her face and gave me the most beautiful thank you I've ever heard in my life. And I thought that, you know, if this girl who's lost everything and everyone can still be brave enough to smile and to be hopeful, it means that there's hope for everyone on this planet. And I promised her I would write a song for her, which I did. And that's it. She walks on because she kept walking.
Do you know what's become of her?
Unfortunately, I don't. I went back to that camp with the song once I had written it because I wanted to play it for her, but she wasn't there anymore and they couldn't tell me where she went, so I've lost track of her. I hope that one day she'll listen to it and she'll know it was for her.
I hope so too. And if you keep telling the story, she will hear
I
it.
Hope so.
It'll,
I hope
it'll
so.
Connect.
She walks on.
guess you'd call it war. All the words we use are weapons from our mouths.
All right, let's transition to Perfect Enemies. What is that about?
Okay, that's a whole different thing. it's a love song. It's a song about, you know, how two people who have loved each other so much can literally become the perfect enemies, because, you know, through friction and, you know, challenges, the challenges that we all go through life, and sometimes as well with time, you forget who the other person is or how you fell in love with them. And that's what the chorus of the song says: how could I forget all the ways you used to love me? I think it's one of the most powerful songs on the record, and from what I hear from people who've heard it, it's one of their favorite songs. Because, you know, whoever's been in a relationship and in a long-term relationship, I think has been through a similar feeling.
My guest is George Paris. His newest public television special is live at the Acropolis. He has a new CD. It's Who I Am Meant to Be. You have a lot going on, George. Thanks for stopping by the studio. It was great speaking with you.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for having me. Thank you so much.
That was Lillian Vasquez in conversation with George Paris on KVCR-TV, soon with George Paris live at the Acropolis. Also, that was just a brief portion of Lillian's interview with George. You can hear the rest on Lifestyles with Lillian Vasquez, Thursday, May 30th, and Saturday, June 1st. You're listening to KVCR. It's on 91.9 KVCR. Online at kvcrnews.org. I'm David Fleming. Later in the program, we'll hear from Eva Mikhailovna with Eva and the Vagabond Tales, some tales of the road, or the San Francisco Bay in this case. First, though, Aubrey Logan. Now, last week, we focused the entire show on her new disc, Where the Sunshine is Expensive. Tonight, we'll hear about touring with Dave Cause, sitting in with Tower of Power, Postmodern Jukebox, and tap dancing to Jimi Hendrix. But first, some of her early years surround music.
I really kind of had to ask you about a Wikipedia quote.
Oh, yeah?
Kind of the last place I went to on you. Not a bad one, but it's very curious. When the band director asked, what instrument did you play?
Mm-hmm.
One, you didn't play any instruments.
Yeah, the answer was no.
They accepted you as long as you agreed to not choose the flute.
Well, that's how I remember it. I'm happy to talk about that.
Please do.
Yeah, very happy to talk about that. But yeah, when I was 12 years old, 13 years old, being in musical theater took me away from school sometimes, and it was time to be back at school like a normal kid for the whole school year. And so all of my friends were in band, and I just desperately wanted to be with them, and it also worked out so that they didn't have the same lunch hours I did. And when you're 12 years old, that's just the end of the world.
Yeah, yeah.
13.
Yeah.
And they had all started band before me. And so I didn't play a wind instrument. I played some piano. I could read music because of the previous work I had to do, but I didn't play a wind instrument. My dad is a band director. My mom is a choir director. At the time, my mother was the choir director at my middle school, so there was no way I was going to be in choir.
Yeah.
But her colleague was the band director, and she went and talked to him and said, could you please let her be in the band? And he said, yeah, of course. What does she play? And the answer is, she doesn't, but she'll learn. And that was true. I would. And he gave me some guidance. I think I remember distinctly him saying, could you just consider avoiding the flute? Could you consider avoiding it? And of course I wasn't going to play the flute. Why would I want to play the flute? I mean, that's what I thought in my head. Everybody plays the flute. But that was the reason why he, in my memory, said, please choose something other than the flute, because he had so many people playing it.
Gotcha.
You know, I've never been one to conform, so I probably wasn't going to choose it anyway. I think the flute is beautiful, by the way, for the record, especially, you know, and I have major, major admiration for some amazing flute players who typically double on saxophone and obviously classical players. But yeah, I didn't choose the flute. My father at the time was a high school administrator, but he was a band director most of his career. And so he brought home a few instruments from his home. He's a jazz trumpet player. So I had a trumpet to try already, tried the French horn, tried the flute, because he did bring it home, tried the saxophone, tried the trombone. And the trombone just... Not only did I have success making a sound on it that felt good, I also saw James Brown and I saw a trombone in that band. I saw Chicago and I saw a trombone in that band. I saw jazz bands and I saw trombones. And I wasn't going to play something that I didn't see typically in a contemporary setting. I didn't want to be only a classical musician. Now, I'm very aware now that obviously we have amazing jazz violinists and we have amazing jazz flutists. Sure. But at the time, when I'm 13, I didn't see that in the jazz band. And I wanted to make sure I had a clear path to the jazz band, not just the wind ensemble. So that narrowed it down as well.
Nice. Okay. And so eventually then, this is middle school. So let's jump well forward to Berklee College of Music.
Yeah.
If you're playing music, if you're in the world of music, Berklee is a goal.
Absolutely. Obviously, I'm a music major. I even graduated. Not everybody graduates Berklee.
And that's a good point, yeah.
I declared trombone as my instrument because when I auditioned, I sang, obviously, because that's what I do. And I played trombone because that's what I do. And I wasn't ready to do that because I followed all the rules. And on our paper to audition, they said, declare instrument. And they only had a spot for one. And I'm kind of going, oh, no, I just have to pick the one I'm stronger at. So I guess I'll pick voice. Hmm. My mom, bless her heart, she's like, you got to get in there and tell them you play the trombone and bring it to your audition. So I think I declared voice on my audition, but I brought the trombone and I played it. And I really believe if I wouldn't have done that, that wouldn't have happened the way it did. So I declared trombone as my instrument because the vocal department I was able to test out of kind of my first year. Oh. And I wanted to make sure I had a really good training there. And at the time, there were 12 trombone faculty at the one school that any college would have killed to have one of, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's not like I'm going to stop singing. That would never happen.
Right.
And I certainly didn't. And very, very happy with my experience there. My most, for lack of a better word, instrumental instructor was Phil Wilson.
Oh,
and
wow.
I would consider him a lot more than an instructor. I did spend, you know, 1 hour a week, just him and I in a room doing private lessons. But our private instruction, the way he taught was a little bit by osmosis. He'd sit there in his chair of judgment, he would call it. And we'd just jam to Ebersold CDs. We would just play trombone the whole time and trade fours. And I learned so much by trading with him that I wouldn't have learned had he sat down and said, here, do all these exercises and learn all this and come back next week with it learned. And that wasn't his way. That wasn't his style. He's old school jazz. He's a complete left-brained musician who learns by ear and experience. And he taught that way. He didn't teach by really assignments. And I actually called him the other day. He's 82 years old.
Hmm.
He can't play anymore because he's beat cancer that was too up close to it in his throat and mouth.
Oh.
He no longer plays trombone, but now he's playing piano like up a storm. And he was talking to me about it. But he's the guy that would sit there and you'd jam with him and I would play a chorus over something difficult, some Billy Strayhorn something.
Mm-hmm.
I'd be sweating, nervous about it, put my trombone down and he'd go, ha, 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 ha. Now here's what you meant to play. And he'd bring up his trombone and play. And so practically speaking, nope, he wasn't very practical. But as a performance major, especially in your later years in school, you had to have more than one instructor. So I studied with John Fiatta and Tony Lotta. Oh, Tony was amazing. He gave me exercises that explained what Phil was trying to explain to me.
Oh.
And he was like the jazz wizard and everything made sense afterwards. And then John Fiatta, he is still very active with the Boston Symphony Orchestra, very active with the Boston Pops, mm-hmm. who I got to play with last year for the first time.
Oh my gosh,
wonderful. The Boston Pops played my music and I'm crying.
I was impressed with Tower of Power, man.
Oh,
you
that
go ahead
too.
With the, yeah.
But yeah, so John Fiatta, you know, Boston has several colleges and he was a classical player who happened to be not stuck up at all and went because, you know, he comes to teach these jazz kids that don't want to learn any fundamentals. But he actually met us where we were at. And I would so struggle with sight reading. And he really helped me learn and fix that problem. And he listened to what my issues actually were. And he really compassionately and kindly helped me. And he's just this monster classical player. And I would never do what he does. But his attitude about it was so great.
So with some of your instructors, you were actually looking at charts or maybe learning charts, but other times you were just listening to J.J. Johnson or Tommy Dorsey or some of the...
Yeah, I mean, Dexter Gordon, most of the people I listened to learn to improvise were not trombone players.
Oh, okay.
And that's the same with my singing. I mean, most... And I sing jazz still on most of my shows. I mean, on every show, there is some really traditional jazz, but even through my pop and funk music, I would assume you could hear... Because I can't get away from it, you know, you can hear elements of jazz in that. And yeah, most of my influences are definitely not trombone players. I very much respect trombone players, but that's not who I by and large listened to growing up at all. And to me, it doesn't matter because I pick up a trombone and put it in my face and I just play what my heart has inside and what my brain has inside. And then I put the trombone down and I sing. And to me, it doesn't feel different. It's just singing. It's the same brain. It's the same person. when Dexter Gordon comes into my brain, there it comes out of my face, whether I'm singing it or playing the trombone. You know, I've obviously listened to Ella Fitzgerald forever, and
oh, yes,
I think
do.
People have figured that out by now. Or Linda Ronstadt. It's just good music, and my favorite musicians of all time. I really don't care what era they're from or what genre they do, but if they deliver a phrase in a compelling way, I'm going to be excited about it. And that's why I love Karen Carpenter and Linda Ronstadt and the Eagles and wonderful country artists who really know how to tell a story.
I really did have it in my mind to ask you who you would consider an influence. And I know that's such a pat question, but I really mean it in the sense that what non-trombone player do you take as an influence on your trombone? So we were just speaking about Dexter Gordon with a saxophone.
Well, the truth is, no matter who I listen to, no matter who I'm influenced by, they are influencing three things for me. My trombone playing, my singing, and my songwriting. It doesn't matter if they do any of those things at all. It doesn't matter if they don't even sing or songwrite or play the trombone. But I know people sometimes will look at what I do and say, you do several different things. You arrange for your band, you write songs, you sing, and you play trombone. That's four things. To me, that's one thing.
Oh, wow.
That's one brain. That's one me.
Well, I think that's the left side of it, now that I think about it. Yeah.
To me, that's one thing. But my influences are the Doobie Brothers.
Oh, good for you.
And Carole King.
Good for you.
And Wolfpack and Tower of Power.
Wow.
And Louis Armstrong and Ella Fitzgerald and Beethoven and Radiohead and Linkin Park and anything where I can believe what kind of music it is you're giving to me and there's some level of excellence, I'm in.
Beautiful.
I don't care if it's two chords or 16, you know?
Wow. I'm David Fleming in conversation with Aubrey Logan. More at aubreylogan.com. Just ahead, sitting in with Tower of Power, singing Jimi Hendrix with tap dance accompaniment, and Scott Bradley and Postmodern Jukebox with some mashups. Postmodern Jukebox is something that Scott Bradley began in his living room, then it took off from there.
Band-aids don't fix bullet holes. You say sorry just for show. If you live like that, you live with ghosts. You forgive, you forget, but you never let it go. 'Cause baby, now we got bad blood. You know we used to be mad love. So take a look what you've done. 'Cause baby, now we got bad blood. Hey, I can't take it back. Look where I'm at. We was on D like DOC, remember that?
Scott was making his videos, I believe, in his New Jersey apartment and went completely viral. And he began putting on tours with various guest artists that he would have had on his video. And Postmodern Jukebox is not a band. You don't show up and see the same cast every time. In fact, you don't know who you're going to see when you go to a Postmodern Jukebox show, because everyone who sings and fronts them are guest artists, and almost like a big SNL family. So I was already making my own arrangements. I wasn't making them sound necessarily vintage, but I would take, because Postmodern Jukebox does make new songs sound vintage. That is absolutely what they do. But I would do something similar. I would take popular songs and twist them and turn them into something jazzy or something totally different. And I believe Scott saw something, maybe got recommended. Shoshana Bean recommended me to Scott Bradley. She's a friend of mine, a fabulous singer on Broadway right now as the waitress. And so I got a call from Scott, and he asked to do a collaboration. So I said, well, my first time with Postmodern Jukebox, it better be good. So I sent him a shell arrangement that I had done with just bass and my voice of Taylor Swift's Bad Blood, but with the rap verse. And he put some of his ideas on it, and we collaborated and came up with Bad Blood. And he's a genius. I mean, he knows every song in the world.
Yep.
I can't believe it. You'll call a song and he'll play it. He'll play it in ragtime perfectly right there in front of you. I think he's an encyclopedia. I don't know what kind of index his brain is, but it's amazing. And he really is a showman, and he really knows how to reach people. And so, you know, once I did my first couple videos with him, it was not long before I joined and went on a tour with Postmodern Jukebox as well. Met some of the best friends I'll ever have and some of the best fans I'll ever have.
Nice.
Problems, and I don't think we can solve them. You made a really deep cut, and baby, now we got.
it to your papa, but I got to give it to your daughter.
Couple of others, Peggy Lee thing in there somewhere. You also did Give It Away in the style of Quincy Jones' Soul Bossa Nova, the Austin Powers thing. Did you bring that to the table, or was that Scott? Realize I don't want to be a miser.
Can't fight a sly or be the wiser. That was just a crazy brainstorming okay, session. Okay. I said jokingly once, we should do a Red Hot Chili Peppers song. And Scott said, how about like Austin Powers, and I was like, okay.
And then it happened. This is almost a transition. If people actually check out these videos, this almost transitions to a couple of tap dancing things that I kind of have to ask you about. These are just videos. Yeah. If you go searching like I did, you will find a couple of Aubrey accompanied by tap dancing. We'll start with Jimi Hendrix's Fire.
I have only one itch and desire. Let me stand next to your fire.
Call her out at some point. Instead of let Jimmy take over, we've got to let Sarah take over.
Move over, Rover, and let Sarah take over. Yeah, you know what I'm talking about.
This is Sarah Reich. Yeah, she's the best tap dancer in the world, and she's one of my good friends that I met via Postmodern Jukebox. She has really shown our current audience that tap dancing is the hippest, most incredible thing. She teaches dancers all around the world how to talk to musicians because she is not just a dancer, but she's an instrumentalist with her feet.
Yes.
And she made a jazz album, and she's one of the most musical people I know. So I had her on my first album. She tap danced with her partner in crime, Melinda Sullivan, on my first single, Pistol.
Pistol.
And then I had her join me for homage to Jimi Hendrix. I was making an EP of songs called Your Mom's Favorite Songs, of songs from the 70s and 80s and 60s, and I said, which song do you want to do, Sarah? Because I want you on this. And she said, well, you know that Jimi Hendrix song, A Fire? And I said, yeah. And she said, you know all those drum fills at the beginning? I said, yeah. And she's like, I'm going to tap those. I said, all right. And that's what we did.
Quickly then on Dave Cause, on Where the Sunshine is Expensive, we have him on Laundry and Put It Where You Want It. You were on tour with him recently, and even then on his 2019 cruise. So first, I guess, gosh, we see a clip with you sitting in with Tower of Power, What Is Hip.
Dave Cause got Tower of Power to do a show on the Dave Cause cruise because they were already touring in Australia, and we happened to be there. So they came up on the boat, and we all got a chance to sit in with them, which was really, I'm a huge, Michael McDonald and Tower of Power, there they are. I'm starstruck by both, but I did get the chance to sit in with Tower of Power, and it was one of the most amazing experiences in my life. I sat in between Doc, very sax player, and the lead trumpet player, and that was a wall of sound, let me tell you.
Yeah, I'd say.
But, I met Dave Cause 2 years ago, or 3 years ago, when I first, in the night, he had me on his 2017 cruise, which I did, and I met him through a friend in Postmodern Jukebox named Ariana Savalas. Hmm. And yes, her dad is Telly Savalas. And I then made an album with Dave because he made a collaboration album called The Summer Horns.
Yeah.
And he had Gerald Albright, Richard Elliott, Rick Braun, Dave, and myself as the artists on that album. So Dave has introduced me to a whole world of people who I've always admired. We did a rendition of Conga by Miami Sound Machine and Gloria Estefan, and I sang it on that album, and then she ended up singing background on it, which was wacky.
Yeah.
By her choice. Mm-hmm. And then got to work with Gordon Goodwin through Dave. So Dave isn't... I have more to thank Dave Cause for than I'll ever be able to.
I'd say, yeah. On that What Is Hip video clip, by the way, it's just a lot of people having fun. This is the Trading Licks session of it. Just everybody comes forward for a moment. Is it? She's not credited anywhere, but did I see Candy Dulfer a couple of...
You did.
Okay.
She was there with us, too.
Wow.
Huge Groove was there with us.
Mm.
And the other members of the Summer Horns were there with us. It was just a big party. I can't even put words to it. It was so self-indulgent. We were just up there having a good old time with our favorite band in the world.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
Also at AubreyLogan.com, you will see all the discs that you just mentioned, the Summer Horns, also the prequel years, which I have to get, and Impossible. Are these all available through your website? Can folks order it right there?
They can. Only Impossible and Where the Sunshine is Expensive are available by physical copy, but everything else is streamable and downloadable. The Summer Horns album is also available by physical copy as well.
Nice. Thank you so much for your time, not only, a few days ago in studio, and just now you're about to go do a sound check. Thank you so much for taking your time out. You could have been warming up. I appreciate it.
You are so kind to have me on your show. I'm really excited about this.
I'm David Fleming in conversation with Aubrey Logan. More at AubreyLogan.com, including her newest release, Where the Sunshine is Expensive. You're listening to KVC Arts on 91.9 KVCR, online at kvcrnews.org. I'm David Fleming. For the remainder of the program now, it's a return to Eva and the Vagabond Tales. As with Aubrey Logan, when I spotlighted the new album, there were leftovers. This includes Eva performing one from the new album in studio at KVCR and some traveling stories. Often at an Eva and the Vagabond Tales show beyond music, you will get some storytelling as well. I'm going to ask you to recount a story for me. Anytime you see Eva play, she will not only just thoroughly entertain you with the songs and really impress you with hopping around, attempting to play the piano or attempting to play the guitar or attempting to play all the instruments that you play. I say that so tongue-in-cheek because I'm such a fan, okay? But you also tell wonderful stories. And these stories could be about, hey, we found a taco truck in Hemet, or whatever. It could also be some of your traveling adventures and couch surfing and a boat in a harbor. Can you go to that one?
Yeah.
If you don't mind, this is just an extraneous recount one of these wonderful stories, please.
Oh, this story. I love this story, and I love telling this story. This was back in the day. We don't do this anymore. Because we have grown up. But what happened was, after one of our shows in San Francisco, I didn't plan the tour very well, and we didn't have a place to stay. And usually what used to happen in the past is we would play a show and people would like us so much that someone would come up and they would look decent enough, and we would just say, well, we'll stay with them. This was years ago. We don't do this anymore. But this particular time, no one paid attention to us. We were like in the corner of this venue and we were playing for these people. It was kind of like one of those places where there's a big theater inside and we were like the entertainment before the real show.
Gotcha.
And so nobody really cared or came up to us.
Oh, boo.
So we were thinking, well, what do we do? And we were already really tired because we just drove from Riverside to San Francisco. So we decided to go on couch surfing, and this was our first time ever going on couch surfing. And all the places were booked. The only place that was left was this man with a boat behind him. And we messaged him, and he said, yeah, you guys could stay on my boathouse.
Wait, can I ask you to back up a moment? You said there's just this guy with a boat behind him.
Mm-hmm.
So were you playing on a harbor? I mean, there was a where a guy could stand there, and if you look over his shoulder there, you see a boat?
Oh, I meant on the website, there's a picture of a guy in the
okay.
boat. Yeah.
Okay.
So there's like little profiles. You can click on the profile and you can check out who they are, you know, their rating. And he had a good okay. rating, but it was kind of weird. It was too, he was very, very nice. And we thought, okay, let's just go there. And it was Jasmine and I that chose this guy. So the two girls in the band chose this man. And Jake and Al, they were kind of upset about it. And so our show finished at around 10 p.m. at night. And we had to drive to the harbor where all the boats were parked. And we thought he had like a house on the harbor. So we pull up to this warehouse and there's nothing there. There's no cars. There's nothing. And it was a foggy night. It was really scary. It was like around 11:30 p.m.
And harbors are always the safest feeling places ever.
Yeah,
anyway, aren't
really.
They?
So. And what happened was this guy came out of the darkness.
Oh boy.
And he's dressed kind of like a sailor, and he came out of the darkness and he was really, really tall, and we were all scared. We wouldn't get out of the car. And he said, but once he opened his mouth, he was so bubbly and so like cute and talkative, and he was like this older man, and he said, yeah, come on, we're gonna go out, sail out to my boathouse. And we thought, wait, we're gonna sail out to your boathouse? And so he said, take everything that's valuable. And we just thought, okay, of course he's going to kill us. He's going to drown us out in the Pacific Ocean. So we told him to give us a second. We called our parents and we told them we loved them. And we told them, hey, this is where we're going to be tonight. And we're not really sure where we're going, but this is where we're going. And I don't know why we didn't just turn around and leave. I mean, we could have just slept in our car, I guess, now that I think about it. But we left our sleeping bags behind. We took our instruments with us. And we didn't know where he was leading us. We still thought that maybe there was like a house there. But when we got through the fog to the entrance of the water, there was a boat, like one of those paddle boats. And we all got on the paddle boat. And he turned on this lantern and he started rowing us out into the sea. And we didn't know where we were going. But the whole time he was talking about, he just kept talking and talking. So we thought, he can't kill us. He's talking a lot. He would never have time to kill us. And he rowed us out to this old boat that was built in 1914. And the way you get on it, there's nets. So you have to actually climb nets to get on this boat.
Like you see pirates boarding yeah. another vessel to...
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And we were all the way out there, like in the San Francisco Bay.
You know, I was in the Navy and I never did that.
Really?
Yeah.
And so what happened was, I think Jake, no, we sent Al. I remember sending Al because Jake was new and I didn't want to traumatize him. So we sent Al on the boat and we started handing instruments to Al. And he was like, he was reaching down, grabbing instruments. And this was out in the open sea. And then we climbed the nets and we walked inside and we were all huddled around. We were scared. And all of a sudden, our exchange for staying there was supposed to be us playing music. So we pulled out our instruments and we kind of got to know him. We started playing songs for him. And then he said, I want to play you guys some songs. And he took out his guitar and he started playing songs for us. We couldn't really make out what the songs were, but I made out some lyrics. And he kept talking about, my Uncle Eddie taught me this song. My Uncle Eddie this, this, and this. And we didn't know what he was talking about, but he played... one of the lyrics was make the world go away and get off my shoulders.
Okay.
And I thought, huh, that sounds so familiar. And he got tired. He had this blind pug too.
Oh.
And his name was Opie.
Oh.
And every time the boat would rock, Opie would just fall over and just lay on his side. And it was so cute. And that night, it was a really cool thing because it was a boat from 1914 and he had like clothing lines with like little pictures clipped on from the boat from all the years of its life.
Oh, wait, cool. Right,
yeah.
Right.
And so he went to sleep and we had like our own little area room and we went to sleep, and in the middle of the night, it was the most peaceful sleep I ever had because we were sleeping on a boat and it was rocking back and forth. And in the morning, we woke up because there was rain and there was a kind of a little storm. And there were bigger boats going by. And we woke up, and I noticed on his wall he had a bunch of records from Eddie Arnold. And that's when I realized he was Eddie Arnold's nephew.
Wow.
and he didn't kill us. He was a very sweet man.
Not only were you not killed in the middle of the night, but you were not killed by Eddie Arnold's nephew.
Yeah.
That makes it even more impressive to not be killed by somebody.
Yeah.
Else.
And sadly, recently I learned that the boat, when we stayed there, it was already sinking. And it would cost $10,000 to make the boat go back up on the land, on, you know, to float.
Float, yeah.
Yeah, and he had no way to fix it, so I'm not really sure what happened. I actually want to check in and see what happened, but yeah, I think the boat is no longer.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
It was called the Suisun, and you can actually see this ship or boat, whatever they're called. You can see it in our music video, because I saved a clip of it on my old Android phone, and I kind of cropped it and made it fit the video.
Oh, way cool.
Yeah.
One more thing before we close it out. I just saw on Facebook fairly recently that you have submitted once again, or you're going to be submitting once again, for the NPR Tiny Desk Concert.
Yeah.
Yay.
Yeah.
Which song are you doing?
I'm doing Tomorrow Comes Too Soon.
Oh, wonderful. Wonderful.
Yeah.
Why?
It was the only song I felt comfortable playing on my own without my band, and we were just so busy with everything coming up that we couldn't get together to play a song or record it for a Tiny Desk. So I decided to just do it on my own. I'm sitting between some laundry sheets hanging in my backyard, and I recorded the song quickly. I don't know what will come of it, but
just an acoustic guitar, I would imagine.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful. Well, this is one that, as we mentioned earlier, this is another one that's been very produced, and I'm pretty sure we do hear a cello or a viola or some sort of bowing going across in that one. But this will just be an acoustic, unplugged version. It sounds really nice.
Yeah.
And now the song she submitted to the NPR Tiny Desk Concert Contest, one from her new album, Uncharted Ocean, called Tomorrow Comes Too Soon.
I wanted to be your moon, but no one looks up when they're lost down in the night. Always wanted to be true, but who believes you when your best is laced with lies? And I still feel the same, since no one ever hears the cries of yesterday. Tomorrow comes too soon, and all my hopes on you. Wanted to be your song, pulling melodies that would bring you along. Wanted the torch songs gone, but every sad word form that didn't come across. And I still feel the same, since no one ever hears the cries of yesterday. And tomorrow comes too soon, and all my hope's on you. Hold me closer than your thoughts, to be our light, casting shadows on the things you didn't like. But light can cloud your eyes, manipulating thoughts of visions in your mind. And I still feel the same, since no one ever hears the cries of yesterday. Tomorrow comes too soon, and all my hope's on you. Hold me closer than your thoughts, I can read.
That was Eva Mikhailovna with Eva and the Vagabond Tales. That was one called Tomorrow Comes Too Soon with the much fuller version on the new album Uncharted Ocean. More at evaandthevagabondtales.com. And with that, we wrap up another edition of KVC Arts. Thanks once again to Eva, and here at KVCR, thanks to Lillian Vasquez, Rick Dulock, Sharina Wad, Taylor Milliner, Andrew Caravella, and KVCR General Manager Tony Papa. Music beds and themes heard on KVCR is composed and performed by Sean Longstreet, so thanks to Sean as well. You can hear past KVCR's programs via podcast at kvcrnews.org/arts. I'm David Fleming. Thanks especially to you for listening and for your support.